My husband is in mess with his mom. What do I do? Welcome to the Therapy Brothers podcast.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Tyler.
We're brothers.
We're therapists.
And we know recovery.
Bring your stories, your questions, your successes with real recovery.
Hey, Tyler, you ready to have some hard conversations?
Let's do it.
Let the Therapy Brothers podcast begin. What's up, Tyler?
How's it going, man?
You know,
things are good.
What are you laughing at?
I mean, I just spent 4 days with you. You got a good life, man. Just being up there with you, you know, just you got the view on the hill, living in your castle. The name of your street's Buckingham Palace or something. I don't know what it's called.
Oh, man.
But you're like perched on the top floor in your master bathroom. Like, geez, man, my bro's made it.
Whatever, man.
I'm proud of you, man.
Several years ago, just the way that we were raised, I knew that when I moved into a house that happened to be on a road called Buckingham Drive, that I would never live that down. So
you're a king, man. Yeah. You're a king. I love it.
Whatever, man.
You've created it. And I just spent 4 days in your kingdom. I was like the peasant there, but even the peasants eat well. It was great.
It was great to have you, man. You're welcome. Yeah. Anytime.
Yeah, well, Stacy, let's turn the time over to you now. Enough about Tyler's kingdom. If you could give us a little bit of background, just kind of share with us what's happening, and we'll go from there.
All right. Yes, it's been about 6 months now, so I found my husband and I, we've been married for about 6 years. And I found on his phone one day after spending the day with his mom that he is and has been addicted to prostitutes for almost our entire marriage. This was May 6th. It was really, really, really traumatizing. And shortly after that, I found out, like days after that, I found out I was pregnant with our fourth child. So that was the worst experience of my life, not the pregnancy, finding out about him. And I don't know, there's so much. So it's been 6 months trying to heal from that. And the pregnancy does not make that easy. But one of the things that was just as painful almost was hearing a conversation that him and his mother had on the phone. Was about 30-minute conversation, and like I always knew that she didn't love me. She accepts me, and but it was like 30 minutes of her fault finding me, and she kind of knew what happened. Well, no, she knew that he cheated on me, and that's all that she knew because he told her, and so she was just trying to make him feel better, as always, kind of just pointing out everything that I have done wrong and. And that what it could have been better if I were to let her watch the kids or just random stuff like that. And so that was maybe a week or two after this discovery. And so it was so, so hard to hear that conversation and almost as bad as the initial discovery.
Yeah.
This conversation, was this the first time you were aware of these kinds of things, or was this just like an example of the pattern that's been there over the years?
I had an intuition, but it was the first time. Obviously, after this, the discovery, I did everything I could to like monitor his phone. So I had that app on his phone, and I guess he could not realize that I could listen to conversations. And then I also, all the stuff, I had it, his location turned on. But anyways, listening to that conversation, I did realize that my intuition about her was definitely true. He and his mother, actually, he lived with his mom when we met. I was 27 or so, and he was 39. I was newly sober 3 years, and he was also trying to get sober. So his mom like saved him by letting him live there. So
sober from alcohol, drugs?
Yeah, drugs and alcohol for me, alcohol for him. So yeah, when I met him, I was in sober living and he was living with his mom.
Gotcha.
Got pregnant within 4 months. And so he and I moved in together, and she was just mortified. She was not happy. She was happy, but she was so sad because it was, she's single, never remarried. So he was her best friend, her roomie, and her, I don't know, basically her partner, kind of. They did everything together. So I understand that part. And I always had an intuition. She wasn't a fan of me. And then, and that maybe he called her a lot for therapy, right? And so he's her baby. He is the youngest of three boys. So it all makes more sense now, but it also doesn't help me to moving forward and like what to do and how to set boundaries and all that.
Yeah. It's one of these things, like, no matter who you are, you're kind of, you know, getting in the way of the relationship that she could have with him. And so she's not going to like you just because you're the wife, and, you know, in a sick and twisted way, she kind of wants to be like the wife. I want to ask you, just side note, how's your recovery going?
It's going really, it is. I can't believe it's only been 6 months. I actually found Essanon right into the,
I'm asking about drugs and alcohol. How's your recovery with that?
It's good. It's really good. I'll have 9 years, God willing.
How many?
9 years.
9 years. Yeah.
Whole. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I mean, Tyler and I, we come from the drug and alcohol arena, and like, I love to celebrate that. Like that's awesome. No small thing. And that sets you up for navigating your current situation really well, but that you've worked, you've already done so much work.
You are a miracle.
Yeah.
Already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Four kids, one on the way, like incredible. You're resilient. And now God has heaped another pile of stuff here to navigate. And you're going to navigate it. You're going to do this. But it sure isn't fair, and it sure sucks. Yeah. So
before you ask anything else, Brandon, I want to then follow up with your current recovery with the sex addiction stuff and the betrayal and all of that. I guess I'm just wondering, what does your gut say about his recovery and whether or not he's working it?
Well, my gut, I'm a little disappointed in, because I never had any suspicion and always thought strong intuition.
Yeah.
But my gut is telling me that that he is strong in his recovery and that I had come first. And it's not just my gut, it's like the action, right? And I was in sober living for 3 years as house manager. I worked around a lot of like newcomers and people early in recovery, and I see the actions speak louder than his words.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Okay. So things are moving. The reason I'm asking is that we might be giving some different advice if you were moving towards a divorce because there was denial and a lot of work happening versus, hey, like it sounds like you feel like there's real commitment coming from his side and you're committed on your side towards the healing part of it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
Go ahead, Tyler.
Go ahead, Brandon. Go ahead, Brandon.
No, no, really. You're going down a train of thought. Keep with it. Go ahead.
No, I guess I'm just wondering, on your side of your own personal recovery, what are you currently engaged in right now? What kind of support do you already have? Like, what's going on for you in your own recovery with the betrayal stuff?
My recovery is pretty much Essanon. I go to Essanon once a week. I have a sponsor, and I'm working on my fourth. I'm finished with my fourth step.
Oh.
I love that meeting. I really do. I didn't think that there was anyone else like me. I really didn't. And my AA, I go to once or twice a week, and I have a local sponsor. When this happened, we moved like a year ago, so I didn't have a local sponsor. I stopped going to meetings. Honestly, I was a little, I was a dry drunk, pretty much not in recovery for a few years after having kids. So when this happened, I was kind of like, just shocked. And I had no support system. I had no fellowship. And that was the hardest part. But the most amazing part is that I never picked up a drink. And I didn't ever even think about picking up a drink. So finding my I do love Al-Anon, but I do feel like AA is my people. So I'm so thankful for both of those programs. We're both doing individual therapy and couples therapy. And yeah, what else?
Like you're saying, you got some built-in recovery capital just from all the recovery work you've done. And so that's good. You're kind of relying upon that now. You got your structure, you got your meetings, you got your things that you're going to. I had a question for you. You say that you think that he's doing well, and actions speak louder than words. Does he have the action of having the strength to have some boundaries with his mom? Does he have boundaries with his mom?
That's one we're working hard with. Mm-hmm. Struggling with, but I do see that he wants to get better. So it's the holidays coming up, and he wants to go take the girls to her. We haven't seen her since May. And he, this weird situation happened where he called her from a landline. Like, it feels like he's like, sometimes when I talk about his mom, it feels like it's his ex or his the girl that he was cheating on, right?
Like he's hiding her from you?
Yeah, it's like he's hiding her from me. So I asked him, because there were a lot of blanks in the story, like, how does she know that we're pregnant? And how did she react to the boundary you set? There was missing pieces. So I said, have you been calling her from like work phone or something? And he said, no. A few times before, I was like, no, I know you've been talking to her, because yeah. I'm kind of, I monitor all his phone calls, probably not the healthiest thing. It's like part of my addiction, I guess. And he said, finally, yes, I called her from a work landline. And because I had asked him to set a boundary with her, and that I wanted to hear it so that I knew, because I had no trust at that point. And he really didn't like that idea. So he called her, apparently set a boundary with her, and then never told me about it. And so when now we have this Christmas Eve brunch coming up, and it's so hard because I want to be okay with him taking the girls to go see her, and it would be so special for all of them. But for me, I just like, it's hard for me to even be okay with that. And I know that I'm going to take a year solid, no mother-in-law, just for my own healing. I'm only doing things that feel good for me, and I get to be selfish like that. But yeah, when it comes to having kids, it makes it a little bit more tricky.
Yeah.
So a couple other questions around this issue with your mother-in-law. Does she know that you heard the conversation 6 months ago?
Yeah, she does.
And he does too. And he does too now then, obviously.
Oh yeah.
You have not talked with her since then?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So the way she knows is through your husband.
Yeah, absolutely. And the way she thinks is, well, I didn't know that she was going to hear it.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Was there an apology or anything like that from her?
No, not at all. But I did block her from my phone a couple weeks ago. I was upset about an apology. I want an apology so bad, but she's an alcoholic. She's not in, she doesn't have a program. I need to realize that she's not the healthiest individual, and that whatever, hand it over to God. And it's just hard because I love my kids so much, and I don't trust her 100%. So why would I trust her with my kids?
Yeah.
I'm working on being able to trust my husband enough, you know, because he's also their parent and he loves his mom, and it's just going to be all right.
Mm-hmm. Just curious, is his dad in the picture?
Yeah, his dad is in the picture. He's also about an hour away. It's kind of a long, like, I could go on and on about this whole topic. His dad and his mother broke up when he was probably like 10 or 11. Okay. And his dad came out of the closet a few years after that. And his dad remarried a man, and his mother never remarried.
Okay. Do you feel like, and maybe this is a bit over psychoanalyzing this here, but So did he just kind of take the role of proxy kind of spouse once dad went out of the picture?
Not at first, but because his mom pretty much told him, I already raised two boys, go live with your dad. At the time, he was kind of a troublemaker anyways, smoking weed, drinking, teenager, lashing out. And so she said, like, take, she got, went back to work, got addicted to working pretty much, and told him to go live with his dad. But years later, after they like kind of reconnected, maybe, yeah.
Yeah. There, I mean, it was, he was 39 living with her.
For 3 years, yeah.
Yeah. I'm just curious more about the enmeshment piece. Like, do you see boundaries blurred? Like, certain things in that relationship? I mean, obviously talking trash on his wife to him is one thing. But like other things that are just kind of like, kind of give you the EBGBs a little bit with that relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wish I knew more about boundaries and all this stuff before, but a couple examples are like, she came over to visit one day and she, and I was going to make everybody lunch. And she was like, well, I thought I was going to take you shopping to Tilly's for your new job. My husband's 46 years old. I said, excuse me. And she said, oh, it's a mother thing. I wanted to take him, make sure he had nice clothes for his new job. I'm like, are you kidding me? And I laughed at the time, but it obviously I haven't even like, it's a little too much. And also when we first got, we had, I got pregnant 4 months after we met. So it was quick. And then we moved in a few months later. And then it was just like, boom, 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 three kids in a row. She would do his laundry and she would like insist on it. And I just thought it was weird.
She would come over to your place and do his laundry?
No, she would offer to do it. He had to bring it over to her.
Oh,
so he
take it over there and she'd do the laundry.
And she would fold it and leave it in the basket. So he would have to go over there, drop it off, go back. And it, she wasn't close, like 10, 15 minute drive on the freeway. But yeah, that, so those things, yeah, I do. Okay. It really.
Yeah. I just wanted a better idea and you gave it of enmeshment. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Kind of. One more example is that he, his oldest brother is married too. And they actually, they, the wife did not like her. Same situation, cut her off from the kids for the first few years of their life until she finally wrote her an email saying that this is my husband and I come first. And she wrote a good email to her. And finally, the mother-in-law kind of stepped back and is allowed in their life again. But I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
Doesn't make it clear.
So this is a tough situation because like you can hear that and there's definitely some, you know, when you look at like the whole models on, you know, family cohesiveness, there's definitely some enmeshment there going on. That's on the far end of the scale of enmeshment, you'd say, you know, when a grown man drives his clothes, when he's living with somebody else, when he drives his clothes to his mom 15 minutes away so that she can do his laundry for him, that's maybe a little bit over the top. The hard part that you have is that you have him having a relationship with his mom that he values and wanting to have a relationship with his mom. And if he's being authentic, he needs to be able to come to you and have that discussion with you. And there does probably need to be some boundaries and some learning and some discussion about what things are going to look like as you guys move forward. Right. And so it's like this weird balancing act of you setting your own boundaries in your relationship, not only with him, but with her, but then also having some influence back and forth with him about his relationship and what he's choosing to do with her and how that's going to affect his relationship with you. And it can kind of get kind of messy sometimes. So where do you start?
All right.
Yeah. I mean, Tyler, what do you think? I want to ask you this, Tyler. What do you think about her taking a year off from her mother-in-law?
I mean, that's up to her to decide if she feels like that's the right thing to do. I wonder about the way things are being communicated. Mm-hmm. I like the idea. What I hear in the situation is that she heard a conversation she wasn't supposed to hear. She told him that she heard it. He's now gone and told mother-in-law, and now there's this weird like triangle going on.
There's even deceit about the way he's contacting the mother-in-law.
Yeah. Well, now that's a relational issue between her and her and him, is that he's been hiding in order to go pursue calling his mom by using a landline because he knows he's being tracked. So there's like all this weird, like, I would love for it to be just more straightforward, you know, hey, mother-in-law, this is it. Well, it's awkward.
Think about it. Like his issue, I mean, he's hiding to call another woman. Now, I know it's different than a prostitute, right. but like when it comes to trust in the relationship, Stacey, do you know what is at the root of enmeshment? Like, why does a parent enmesh with a child?
I honestly don't know if I could answer that.
They need to use the child for something. And so it's a really selfish thing. I mean, you look at doing his laundry. Let's take that example. That looks like mom's being nice. Hey, I'll do your laundry for you. No. Mom is feeling validation. Mom is finding a way to get him over to the house consistently to be able to talk about you, talk about everything. So she's using her son in order to get something from him. Now, on the flip side of this, it's really interesting. I went to a CSAT training. The guy giving the training is named Ken Adams. And one of the first books that he wrote was called When He's Married to Mom. And it's interesting because sex addiction and mother enmeshment, they go hand in hand, because you take a guy who's been enmeshed with his mom and the mom's been using him. And what that leads to is this feeling of, I want validation and acceptance from the feminine. I want to please them. I want to connect to them. I want to feel good. And it's intoxicating. And so they take that same feeling and need of trying to please and make women happy, and they take it out and they sexualize it and they turn it into a sex addiction. And so that's kind of why the roots, and now his father wounds definitely will play into his addiction, and we could go down that road too. You mix the two, but at the core of his recovery, at the very core of his recovery, is a readjustment in that relationship with his mother, because it will help him once he removes that, I know who I am when I please my mom. Then it gives him a chance to actually know who he is. Now I have boundaries with mom. Now I don't figure out my worth from pleasing her. I figure out my worth from other ways, like connecting to God or whatever it is. And so this topic that we're talking about is very important for you to trust that he's actually in recovery. Him having boundaries with his mother is indicative of whether or not he's in recovery or not.
His personal work.
Yes.
Because of that reason, Brandon, that he's got a compulsion to what he's gone and done is he's tied his value as a person to pleasing his mother at all costs, and then eventually through those sexual means, pursuing it from other women. Right. Yes. And so like real recovery actually comes when you break the belief system and actually step into going, hey, I can have some boundaries with mom. And you'll know that this is true. Like if you were to, I wish he was here to talk with us today, you'll know this is true, that he would rather do almost anything else than have a hard conversation
and disappoint
or set a boundary with his mom. Right. Yeah. He would rather go run a marathon without any training. He would rather give up all of his addictions than have that one conversation with his mom. And only he will know that, but he'll have that feeling inside. It's like a compulsion, almost like he can't help himself.
Hence the reason he's hiding his phone calls from you, which is a big concern. Like that is not okay.
That's an integrity issue.
And not only an integrity issue of breaking trust with you, Stacey, in the relationship, but it also shows this I don't know what other word to use than pathetic need to please her.
He's still playing the rules of the old game to find his value through her. And she, what's really interesting is that she's trying to use him for the same thing.
Yeah.
So you have two people who are trying to get their value by pleasing the other person when they're both feeling a bankrupt emotionally.
Does Stacy, does he show up weak with you? Does he show up like, I want to please you and I want you to like me? And is he the opposite? Like, how does he show up with you?
He is. Yeah, he does. He and his therapist have realized for sure that he is a people pleaser.
Yeah. He's a 100%. Mr. Nice Guy.
He is a Mr. Nice Guy. Yeah.
That's what I would have guessed. Go ahead.
You're attracted to parts of that. That's why you're with him in the first place. It's just that it's not authentic because it's a performance thing for his value rather than this is me.
And it's probably a combination of both, right, yes. Tyler? Like, he's probably a good guy, a nice
he is a
guy,
good guy. I'm sure.
But then he uses that nice guyness in order for Stacy to think, oh, you're great. And in order for mom to think, oh, you're great.
It's the nice guyness leads to the lack of ability to disappoint anybody. And that leads to lying and deceit and hiding and all those other things that then fuel the addiction for the coping. Right.
Right. So the question is, Stacy, coming back to you, this is kind of fun to psychoanalyze this guy that we don't even know. And we're not even talking to, right? This comes back to you, Stacy. We know that the enmeshment with mom is an issue. We know it's at the core and the root of his addiction. But the question for you is, how do you navigate that? What is healthy for you to help this process and help things get better here? Right? That's kind of the question here, right? And it sounds like you're doing some things really well. And then maybe there's some things to talk about of like things to navigate in a certain way. So I actually appreciate the, I need to take time away from mother-in-law.
I'm okay with that.
Good.
I would like for you to be upfront about it. That'd be okay.
Yeah.
Yep. I could.
Your kid's going to have contact with her. I want you to just kind of sit on something and sort it out. Are you letting them or wanting them to go out of guilt? Or are you letting them and wanting them to go because in your heart of hearts, it feels like the right thing to do and you feel peace about it, even though it's scary?
She's always been really good to the kids. They love her, and I'm sure she's got a million gifts for them to open, which might as well do it there. And I do feel it's the right thing to do.
Okay. You're pretty confident in that. When I asked you that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So you trust yourself that those feelings are the right thing. And so now it's a matter of, how do I go forward with this and deal with the emotions you have around them going to have that contact, right? Mm-hmm. So what are some tools you can use in order to surrender some things, to let go of some things, and navigate it in a healthy way when your kids come back, being able to talk to them but not like, you know, plant seeds of fear or whatever inside of them. Like, how do you navigate that in a healthy way? Right.
For me, I know that I'm going to be sad when they leave. They hardly ever leave without me. And so to go see mother-in-law an hour away on Christmas Eve, pity party, but I'll be sad for a minute, and then I'll obviously pray about it before, and just be happy that they get to go see their grandma, the one grandma that's local, and uncle. They love Kevin's brother. Yeah. Will be, and yeah, so also when they're gone, I'm a full-time mom. I don't work. I'm a mom. I stay at home. I can get some wrapping done and I can do whatever I need to do. It'll probably be
on Christmas Eve. That's a godsend.
Yeah. It'll be nice. Oh.
What about the emotional part for you? Those are like, those are good things to do, distractions and things. And like, what about that word, Brandon? I saw your face when Brandon said the word surrender. What was that look on your face when he said that word?
I'm so pregnant, I'll probably just cry, and that'll be a good way. It's fine to cry.
It's fine to cry.
I'll turn on some music, I'll cry, and I'll wrap presents. And I'm sure we'll be fine.
I would suggest one more, and you already know this. We're talking about step three, turn your will and your life over to the care of God. So God is telling you the right thing to do is to let your kids go and to have that experience, right? So you're confident in that. Yeah, I can feel the steadiness there. So if that's the truth, then now it's up to you to serenity prayer this and to like, you know that some things are outside your control. I love what you're saying. Let yourself cry, wrap some presents, listen to some music. And I would say, make a phone call, like call somebody who supports you. Maybe you cry to them. Maybe they laugh. Maybe you just talk about Christmas or whatever, but get a little bit of support and don't just stay within yourself. You know what, Stacey, you're pretty healthy in a lot of ways. Like you see this pretty clearly. We're not having to try to get you to this place of healthiness. So a lot of the things are just use the tools that you already got.
I think, you know, kind of in the broader sense of the navigation of this triangle between your partner and your mother-in-law and the way that things are happening there, that's maybe the place where navigating some of those conversations, I think, is going to be some of the hard part to step into over and over again. The kinds of things where, you know, you could either go to your partner and say, I can't believe your mom didn't said those things. I'm so mad at her, that and the other. Or you could go to him and you could say, I mean, part of the issue here is that you could be mad at your mother-in-law, but the fact is that your partner, he facilitated those conversations and went along with them too.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That
right.
It's okay to address that and to say, but I would suggest you address that from the point of view of your own values and inviting him to help things go right.
Yeah.
So, you know, so, hey, you know, I have a hard time. I'm taking a year off from even seeing your mom. I don't want that to be the case the rest of my life. This is what I'm going to work on. This is how you could help it go right. You know, if you're going there and talking bad about me, I'm not going to want to go there, right? If I know that you're going to go there and you're going to have my back and you're going to make sure that there's some boundaries there and there's certain conversations that we're not going to have, that's going to be a lot easier for me to lean back in. Right.
Right.
That's how you can provide. That's how you can offer your strength and help things go right. And I'm going to keep working on letting go of my hard feelings and all of that other stuff.
Yep.
Those kinds of conversations are painful, but necessary with your partner.
Mm-hmm.
To try to help things move in the right direction.
Right. Building trust.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder, I'll say the same thing Tyler just said, maybe in just a little different wording, is I wonder if you have had healthy boundaries around that breach of trust that he's gone behind your back with his mom. And when we say healthy boundaries, what we're not saying is you need to go control him to not do that again. We're not saying that. But for you to be strong enough to say how much it hurt you and how, you know, like, what you need in a relationship when it comes to trust, mm-hmm. And then hand it over to him, whether he can respect those boundaries or not. You know, and not control him to push him away from his mom. But actually empower him, like, hey, like him calling her behind your back is a big deal. Right.
Yeah. Well, I didn't really, honestly, you can use my phone if you need to have a private conversation with your mom. It wasn't that as much as the line to me afterwards.
Mind yes.
My,
yeah.
Yeah. And it was a big, big, like, it was up at the top of my list of boundaries. And I, when it all happened, I needed to reevaluate my consequences for those boundaries because they were all, you move out. And like you die in early recovery. And I'm not going to kick them out for like... honestly, a small lie.
Right.
And something I wanted to clarify, because like I feel bad talking about all this because we've come so far since, besides with the mask still, but I had asked him in the beginning of my Al-Anon in recovery to record. They were going to go to lunch together, and I had asked him to call me or record me when he made this boundary. And that's so it wasn't like, I don't know, I just wanted to clarify that. It wasn't like me listening in on his phone conversations. It was kind of like a little bit more nutty on my end. Like, okay, if you go to lunch with your mom, and now it does sound crazy saying out loud, you need to record that or you need to call me during and mute it during. So.
I think I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And Tyler, maybe like if there was a toxic relationship and I knew what a toxic relationship between my spouse and someone else was harming my marriage, it would be okay for me to say, hey, I need to hear you. I need to hear you have a boundary with them. But I would prefer that, hey, could you make a phone call while I'm here? And but only if they're actually acting in their truth when they make that boundary. It's not just them doing it for me. And so like, hey, I just need to know you're going to step up for me. I need to know that you got my back, and it sounds like sister-in-law navigated it pretty well. And I hope brother-in-law, he was the one that had to really stand there and have that, like stay steady with that. Hopefully for that to actually really get better. So, but it's there.
Eventually, though, it's got to go to the place where even if she's not present, he would do those things, right? Like, yeah, you're right, Brandon. I agree. Like, it can be some, but what you don't want is like, okay, we're all going to make a call and you're going to do this thing. And then right after you're done, he goes, hey, I'm going to go for a drive. And then he gets on the phone with some, with her, with his mom again. It's like, hey, sorry, I had to do that. Like,
Well, the thing about it is that the mother-in-law, this is classic mother-in-law, and it's classic, by the way, it's classic borderline personality disorder. And I'm not diagnosing her, but it's classic. I'm gonna pit my wife between this, and so I'm gonna, if I'm the mother-in-law, I'm gonna pit the wife between us, and then I'm gonna see how much you really do love me, right? Like, even if your wife doesn't want you to talk to me, you'll sneak away and call me. Oh, that makes me feel good. Deep down, that makes me feel good, right? So as the wife, you don't play that game, because you can step into this and you can have more boundaries and tell him not to do this and not, and that just sets him up even more to make her feel good, because now it's like the mean wife is like, you can't even talk to your mom, and now he's going off to like be enmeshed with her. You don't even play that game. You don't go there and say you can and can't do this. You just say, hey, I want, like, I value trust. I value connection. I value being chosen. I want to be chosen. You can do whatever the heck you want, but this relationship is a problem in our relationship, so it's got to shift. Now you go do your work to figure out how to shift it.
Which is what I like about what Stacy did, Brandon, where she's saying, I can't control for sure whether or not he goes to his mother and mother's place or not, right? In fact, my gut says that it's still good for the kids to have a
To go
relationship with
there
her,
for
right? Yeah,
Christmas. Yeah.
right. But Stacy's still saying what I do have control over is that I'm not going to go there and have those interactions
That's
right
beautiful.
now. I've got my own issues I want to work through first. I would need some space and time. I want to get my feet planted. That's a good boundary because it's on self.
Yep. And
It's
then
on her
he gets to
choices.
choose what he does.
Yeah, and then he can
Yeah.
decide what he wants to
Now
do in,
that's a beautiful example of a boundary. Yep. And it's hard though. It's
It's
scary.
hard.
Requires some surrender.
Yeah.
My stubbornness says that she gets what she wants, you know, her son and then her grandkids, and then I get, and not me.
But it's not
Yeah.
about that, right? Like
It's not.
that's your stubbornness playing that game of like, are you choosing her or me? And what it's about is you love your kids. You think that relationship that she has with them is a good thing for them. You're choosing this. And in your truth, that's what you're acting upon, right? It's not a win lose her versus you thing.
Although it's natural to go there. It is natural to go. It's but going there, that's the natural thing to do, but it sends you down the same road of the game that you're trying to break. Like, yeah, you don't you don't need to have her approval of you in order to be a good person either.
Right. Yeah.
Even though it would be nice if you could go and enjoy your company and she was happy to see you. That would be really awesome.
It would be.
But that's not where you're at right now.
That's not reality. Yeah.
Stacy, we're running low on time. Do you have any last questions for us or any last things?
Like, you mentioned that book, which was a really good read and I loved it. It was recommended to me by my first therapist within like 5 minutes of talking to her. But in
oh,
that
really?
Book,
yeah.
How important it is to find a therapist that has experience with this subject, right?
Absolutely.
How important do you think that is, really? Because he has a therapist and he loves him and he doesn't really know or agree with the enmeshment thing or think it's a big deal.
Did you see Brandon's face when you asked the question? Brandon answered the question just with a look on his face.
I mean, unless you're totally like making stuff up, Stacy, like in a 40-minute conversation on a podcast, you gave three examples that show blatant enmeshment to me. And if a therapist is like, I don't agree, that then that therapist is either drinking in his bullshit and he's totally manipulating that therapist, or that therapist is out to lunch. And so we're talking about a core wound. We're talking about little t trauma for all of childhood and a lot of adulthood here. And for that therapist to minimize that out and be like, oh yeah, yeah, let's just talk about your week or whatever, you know, that's concerning to me. So if the therapist is helpful because they can talk about whatever and it's a support for him, great. But they're not getting to the root issues if the therapist isn't talking about this enmeshment issue with him.
Yep, understood.
In my opinion.
Yeah, it's hard because it's important to have a therapist that you really connect with. And if he's got that, that's going to be hard to give up. But those core deeper issues, like, I mean, you can kind of, you can maybe just do a little inventory with your husband about the fruits that are coming as a result of these issues and just try to help see that these fruits are, there's actual real life fruits that are being produced as a result of these issues right from the past. And if you like the fruits, keep going. If you don't, then you need to address them.
Does your husband acknowledge the enmeshment?
He absolutely does.
Oh yeah. I mean, that therapist, I don't know. That concerns me.
And if the therapist,
yeah.
Well, and he is in recovery, sober 30 years. He's in AA and he does believe the enmeshment a little bit, but there's like no addressing it. Right. Cause yeah. I know how it is from reading that book that you need to like somehow like work through that and detach from mother.
Yeah. And a lot of there's probably if your husband, and I don't know if he allowed himself to go there, there's probably some feelings of resentment because he's been used for so long. But before those feelings of resentment are feelings of love and my mom's so important and all
loyalty.
So loyalty. It's like I can't go there with mom because I got to stay loyal and I got to think good about her and I got to. But if you were to allow himself to take those things down, who knows what kind of floodgates would come out. And so it's almost easier to stay in that place of loyalty you know, so who knows where it would go. But I would say in therapy, addressing it is important.
That seems important to me too. Yep. So, Stacy, thank you for your willingness to come on the show today and ask your questions and be so open. Appreciate your willingness to come and share yourself.
Yep. Thank you guys both.
All right. Have a great day, Stacy. We'll see you later.